This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. How much would you pay for your dog's dialysis or your cat's chemotherapy? These days, as veterinary medicine expands its capabilities, the bills Americans pay for their pets are expanding as well. A survey of U.S. pet owners shows two-thirds would willingly shell out up to $1,000 to save Fluffy or Fido, and one-quarter would pay as much as $3,000. However, just because treatment for a beloved animal is available doesn't mean everyone can or should take advantage of it. Many veterinary doctors say they increasingly struggle with the ethics of this, what surgeries or medicines to recommend, given clients' ability to pay, and also how long an animal might live. Still, for many pet owners, drawing a line based purely on dollars and cents can be heartbreaking when these days the dog or cat feels like a furry member of the family. Today in The Exchange, pet economics, the costs of our companion animals, and how much is too much? Let's hear from you on this question. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. We have three guests for the hour. With me in studio, Dr. Faith Buckley, veterinarian specializing in internal medicine. She practices at the Capital Area Veterinary Emergency and Specialty. And by the way, Dr. Buckley has two cats, one dog, and two turtles. Dr. Buckley, it's really nice to meet you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Also with us in studio, Monica Zuloff. She's president of the Animal Rescue League of New Hampshire, which is based in Bedford. Monica herself has two dogs. And Monica, welcome.
Thank you.
And joining us by phone from Baltimore, David Grimm, online news editor of Science, the leading journal of science news and scientific research. David is author of the new book, Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Cats and Dogs. David has two cats. And David Grimm, welcome to you, too.
Thanks, Laura.
Well, let's start off with your own story, David, that really sheds a wider light on this topic. And this is a tale of a kitten. Everybody's going, aw, named Jasper, who got really sick just at 5 months old. So what did you do to save Jasper?
Yeah, we had adopted Jasper and his sister Jezebel from a shelter. I think they were about 8 weeks old, and we had them for a few months, and they were, like all kittens, very playful. And one day we came home, and Jasper was sort of just crumpled into himself on the bed and wasn't very responsive. And, of course, we freaked out. We took him to our vet, who basically said that he was probably going to die. They weren't sure why, and we rushed him to an emergency clinic. Luckily, Baltimore has like a 24-hour vet emergency clinic. And basically, they hooked him up to IVs, and they ran all these tests, and he saw a specialist or two, and they kept him for 3 days. Turned out he had gone into massive kidney failure. Nobody knew why, but very fortunately, they were able to save his life, and we still have him today. But the whole 3 days in the emergency room cost us about $3,000, and it got me thinking about a couple things. First of all, that we were willing to spend that much money because we were happy to spend it. I mean, we were just coming out of being students and didn't have a whole lot of money, but even after a few months, this cat had sort of become like a child to us, and we would have really done almost anything to save him. But that we were able to spend this much money, that, you know, that such high-quality human-like care and specialists were even available to do the kinds of things that they were able to do with him, and also sort of sitting there in that emergency room, waiting room, and seeing that we weren't the only crazy pet people out there in the world. There were, you know, people forking over that second credit card to save their dog's life, or, you know, maybe a family crying in the corner because they had just lost their beloved pet. And it really got me thinking about this whole idea of how far we've really come in our relationship with both cats and dogs, you know, sort of how they used to be kind of just animals and maybe just pets, and now they've really become members of the family.
$3,000 to save a five-month-old kitten.
That's right. And
wow.
That was 10 years ago, and so I'm sure it would be even more now.
Well, and as you said, David, this kind of got you interested in this whole topic. You put your journalist hat on, the treatments and dollars that they require. You write, David, represents a remarkable shift, really, in mindset from earlier generations where veterinary care was really for farm animals, you know, cows and horses and pigs, who created economic value for their owners. Felines and canines were largely left to fend for themselves. What's behind this shift, David? What do you think?
Yeah, there's been this just really interesting transformation that's happened, not only in our society, but actually in veterinary medicine over the last century. You know, as you said, Laura, you know, the veterinarian of the past was really focused on large animals that had economic value, you know, that the family needed its cow, the family needed its for food, the family needed its horse for transportation. It was like having a car, and if your car broke down, the veterinarian would come, charge you a few bucks, and try to fix your car. And, you know, maybe the fix wasn't the most sort of, user-friendly thing. Maybe they were sort of cauterizing a wound with, like, a hot iron or something like that. But, you know, you pay a few bucks. You would certainly never pay more than the animal was worth. If your horse was worth 50 bucks and the veterinarian said, well, it's going to cost 100 bucks for me to treat this horse, you would say, well, let's just kill the horse. And what happened is these animals started to disappear from our lives as our society became more urban. And also around the turn of the 20th century, cats and dogs, who were mostly been outside pets and really sort of seen as animals and just kind of pets, started to come indoors. Flea and tick products started to bring them indoors, which really changed their relationship with us. We were sleeping in our beds. They were sleeping with our children. We were starting to buy toys for them. And they were starting to slowly but surely become more like a member of the family than just sort of this animal or this pet. And that meant that people really wanted to spend money when their pet got sick. And the really interesting thing that started happening was, well, first of all, veterinarians were losing their income because all the cows and horses were disappearing. So sort of cats and dogs saved their profession because now they had a new animal to work on. But the relationship changed, too. The veterinarian couldn't just come in and say, well, let me take a hot poker and cauterize that cat's wound. You know, the veterinarians really had to become a lot more like human doctors because they recognized that people had a much different relationship with their cat or dog than they did with their sheep or their horse. These people love these animals. They consider them members of the family, children in some cases. And so you saw the veterinarian really transform himself. And it was mostly men at this point, you know, into something much more like a physician, you know, adopting human-like medicine, getting, you know, very, you know, things like vaccines and surgeries and things like that. And also this ability, you know, a lot of these animals were economically worthless. You know, the cat may have just been found on the street, or the dog may have just been inherited from a neighbor or gifted from a neighbor. So these animals, unlike a cow or a horse, had zero economic value, and yet owners were sometimes willing to pay hundreds or, you know, today increasingly thousands of dollars to save these animals because they weren't thinking about an economic relationship. They were thinking about a sentimental one. So the veterinarian, as pets really became family members, veterinarians really sort of transformed, as I sort of write in my book, from the mechanics of livestock to the pediatricians of fur babies.
Yeah, and Dr. Buckley, let me ask you about that. How do you feel about that? Pediatricians for fur babies.
Well, I completely understand what he's talking about, and especially thinking about your kitten. So I'm that specialist who has done dialysis on animals, you know, who treats kidney failure aggressively. And I'm that person who people come to when they want you to save their young kitten or young dog. Oftentimes it's all of a sudden, you know, they got into something they shouldn't have, and now all of a sudden they're in organ failure. And it's a very emotional thing. They were fine 5 hours ago, and now all of a sudden you're telling me this is life or death and I need to make this decision. And we don't necessarily have a few days for them to wait to make the decision. So, you know, we've got these fur babies, and people don't have time to process, well, can I afford this? Can I not? How much do I want to spend? It's you need to decide right now what we're going to do. The clock is working against us. And that's certainly another part of this, is things often come out of the blue. There's no prep time for people to process. And then that's when they realize how much these animals mean to them, because their, you know, backs are against the wall. Their gut instinct is saying, I can't lose this animal. It's too devastating. And just the fact that those people have that gut instinct just kind of brightens the awareness of, I didn't realize I cared this much. You know, there are a lot of people. My uncle is a perfect example. Before they got a dog, he would constantly mock me about, oh, people do this for their dog and that for their cat. Really, you know, always a joke. And now he's the man who has a matching raincoat for his dog.
Oh, come on.
So it's one of those things, people don't realize the attachment that they have until they're kind of put in a position where, what do you mean I might lose them? And you know, that just kind of shows us how far this has come and how much people really, really care about their animals.
Okay, so has it come too far, Dr. Buckley? Recognizing your obvious bias, you're a veterinarian. Has it come too far? I mean, fur babies, really?
So I think, you know, there is a fine line. I don't think it's come too far as what we can offer people. I think the fact that we have all of these advances really stemmed from the fact that people wanted to know more. You know, they wanted, what do you mean you don't have the ability to tell me exactly what's going on? How come? So I almost feel the profession, as far as what we can offer and all of the new advancements for treatment options, came from the fact of clients who said, you should be able to do more for me. Why can't you? And because why would we be as far as saying, you know, I can place a small coil around a tumor in my dog's brain that will emit chemotherapy. I mean, that's literally how far it's come. And nobody would be investigating things like that if there weren't clients that were asking them, you know, what else can you do? What else can we try? And then, you know, that's kind of how these things have evolved. And yet I feel like it's our responsibility to say, to at least give people their options and let them decide. I'm never going to criticize people if they don't want to pursue everything that's available to them. But it is our responsibility to let them know what's available and let them make an informed decision about how they want to proceed.
And let them know how much it costs.
I'm always very, very upfront with people. You know,
it gets especially tough as animals get older. I think David's written that they're never going to live as long as we do, no matter what we might do or try. Let me invite our listeners to join us. And then, Monica, I want to hear from you, too, on this. The exchange number is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can always find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, the email exchange@nhpr.org. The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Today in the exchange, we're looking at the dollars and cents of pet ownership. And as we're hearing, the cost of owning pets can be daunting as veterinary medicine has advanced, never mind doggy daycare and all manner of niceties for our animals. We're looking at this and we're asking, how far should we go to take care of our companion animals? Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. And Monica, you know, it would be easy to spend the hour lamenting how much money people spend on their pets these days. What's the other side of the equation, Monica? What's the value of pets in our lives?
I think it's really hard to quantify the value of pets in our lives. We recently did some research, and the CDC has a whole section on health benefits for owning pets. So for elderly people, it reduces medication needs. It increases their social interactions with other people. It encourages them to exercise. It's valuable for folks suffering from PTSD, autistic children. The value of the relationship that we have with pets is really hard to put a price tag on.
So there's research that shows that, you know, they lower our blood pressure, maybe even lower our cholesterol, who knows?
For a lot of people, it's the only non-judgmental relationship they're involved in. If you think about your dog or your cat, but particularly dogs, they want to do whatever you want to do. So if you want to go for a ride in the car, the dog's like, I'll go for a ride in the car. You want to take a nap? They want to take a nap. You want to have something to eat? They'll have something to eat. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a really great relationship that people have. And we have leisure time now to foster those relationships. So when David talks about our changing culture, people have fewer children. So when you were working on a farm and you had 8 kids, hanging out with the dog wasn't like what you thought would be a great time. Now people, and particularly, you know, empty nesters, we have time, we have financial resources, and hanging out with the dog sounds very appealing.
How do you feel about the large amounts of money that people can spend, happily, as David Grimm told us, to save a kitten or a dog or a parakeet, whatever? Where do you draw the line, Monica?
I'm not comfortable drawing the line for folks. I think that it's a complicated and personal decision. For us at the shelter, we really look at the quality of life for the animal. So just because you can do something for a dog or a cat or a bird or a rabbit doesn't necessarily mean it's in the best interest of the animal. And what's their life going to be like? you know, it's hard for people to make a decision to undergo chemotherapy. An animal's not making that decision. There's somebody else making it for them. And some of that's animal temperament. Some animals are going to be able to wear a cone for a long period of time or be inside. And for other animals, that would be a real hardship.
Now, that's real interesting. So when you decide, yes, I'm going to do whatever it takes to save, you know, my cat's life, you're making that decision and the treatment may be uncomfortable.
And you partner with your vet. I mean, that's where the vet steps in and says, you know, have you thought about this, that, and the other thing? You know, so, you know, and particularly the emergency vet hospitals are that you need to make the decision now and these are your options.
Yeah,
so.
And it's really tough when your pet, as David's was, you know, look close to death. Go ahead, Dr. Buckley.
I was just going to comment on that in the, you know, a perfect example is, you know, cancer chemotherapy for animals. You can have the same exact cancer in two different patients and our recommendations might be different. You know, maybe, you know, as far as receiving chemotherapy, they need to get some injections. You have a kitty who is a stress bucket just to be in the car. Going to the vet every 2 or 3 weeks is really poor quality of life for that particular animal. And the long-term goal for all of this is their quality of life, as opposed to you might have another kitty that, you know, wants his belly rubbed the whole time he's getting his treatment. You know, it's a very different experience for those individual animals.
All right. Well, and David Grimm, I want to get your thoughts on that, too. But we are going to take a quick break. More on pet economics in just a moment. Let's check in with our summer car raffle. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the financial realities of pet ownership. Let's hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Send an email to exchange@nhpr.org. Post a comment on our Facebook page. We're looking at the value of our domesticated creatures. They are closer to us than at any point in human history, as we're hearing, and yet the cost of owning pets can be daunting as veterinary medicine has advanced. Let's get your thoughts, questions, comments in at 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. Dr. Faith Buckley is with us in studio. She practices at Capital Area Veterinary Emergency and Specialty. Also with us, Monica Zuloff. She's president of the Animal Rescue League of New Hampshire. And on the phone from Baltimore is David Grimm, online news editor of Science, the world's leading journal of science news and scientific research. He's also the author of the new book, Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Cats and Dogs. And all of you, before we go to our listeners, I did want to ask you, David, obviously each person has to answer this question for themselves, but how much is too much? How do you see people navigating this, David?
Yeah, I sort of agree with Monica that, you know, it's a bit hard to, you know, put a price tag. It's going to be different for different people. I think one of the things that's really created this dilemma recently is, you know, 20, 30 years ago, if you went to the vet and your cat or your dog had cancer or got, you know, maybe kind of mangled by a car, the only option really was really euthanasia. And so nobody, even though that was a terrible thing, there was no sort of hand-wringing about that because that's what was on the table. The vet said, you know, we really got to put this animal to sleep. It's suffering. And everybody could sort of agree that's the best option. But
so
now
it was easier, right? You didn't have to make these hard choices.
I think it was easier in a way because it was very straightforward. But now you go to your vet and your dog, you know, as Faith mentioned, has a brain tumor, or your cat, you know, like mine, is going into kidney failure. And the vet says, well, we could euthanize, you know, or we could, you know, and actually I think very few vets would even probably make that recommendation right now. But, you know, or we could try this chemotherapy, or we could try this experimental stem cell treatment, or we could put this wire in his brain. And then all of a sudden, then the owner, it creates a conflict, you know, for the owner, because the owner is like, oh my, and then, you know, the prices start coming out. It's going to be $2,000 for this or $5,000 for this. And I've known people that have spent $20,000 or more on some pretty, you know, cutting edge procedures. And then all of a sudden, when you know euthanasia as the client is not the only option on the table, but maybe you can't afford it, what do you do? Especially if this is an animal you see as a member of your family. Well, yes, you are going to spend the money in a lot of circumstances. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, Faith has had clients that have, you know, maxed out those credit cards. And, you know, I've talked to vets that have had clients, you know, mortgage their houses, sell their cars.
Wait. Really? Mortgage their houses,
sure.
Sell their cars?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure. And the flip side, I think it creates, you know, and Faith could probably speak to this too, but I think it creates a dilemma for vets too. I spoke to the former head of the American Veterinary Medical Association a couple years ago, you know, and he told me, you know, if we're charging a client $20,000 to fix his cat, you know, should that be something we're doing? Should we even offer that procedure, especially to a client we know might not be able to afford it? What sort of kind of, should we try to avoid these dilemmas by not, you know, not even proposing those things? And so I think it's not just a case of, you know, a lot of hang-wringing on owners' parts. I think there's a lot of hang-wringing on veterinarians' parts as well.
Yeah, Dr. Buckley, can you talk about that? I mean, you need to be honest with folks and say, here's what I can offer. And you said earlier that there's a lot more you can offer these days than maybe you could have 20 years ago. But how do you navigate the ethics of that for yourself?
Absolutely. I think that's something that all of us struggle with every single day, especially when animals are sick. A good example is when animals are new diabetics, per se, when they're first diagnosed as a diabetic, they can be incredibly sick. And that's why we first diagnose them sometimes, gravely sick, where they need several days in the hospital just to get things back in order. So this way, then we can go on to manage a diabetic. And that could be very expensive and very, labor intensive and medication expensive just to get them kind of back to square one. And so people, you know, their gut instinct may be, okay, I'm going to spend a couple of $1,000 to help get them better. Yes, I absolutely want you to save the pet. But then I always try to take them back and say, okay, let's say we get them through this. Now you're going to be dealing with a long-term diabetic. Is that something that you're prepared to do? You know, insulin twice a day, the medication expenses with that. This is something that's going to be for the rest of their life.
Wow.
If they're not willing to do that, well, why have them spend the several thousand dollars when they're sick? You know, we always kind of have to try to think a little bit short term, but also long term before we come up with a treatment plan. And I think that that's our responsibility to educate people. Well, what are our long term expectations as well as our short term expectations? And then make sure that the client has that information before they make a decision about how they want to proceed.
Yeah, go ahead, finish up.
So, you know, because their gut instinct is saying, of course, do something. And then afterwards they think, wait, I can't give them shots twice a day. That's not even going to happen.
Well, I'm working or I'm traveling.
Right.
Or, yeah.
And so it becomes very difficult for people, you know, not knowing which way to go. At the same token, we need to give them all their options. We can never judge somebody by either their appearance or their initial reaction. We don't, you know, they're feeling a lot of emotions, especially when this is something all of a sudden. And I never feel like we should withhold information or options.
Again, our phone number. Yeah. Hang on, David. Okay. I've got a caller from Portland, Maine, who wants to jump into our conversation. And you can call us, too. The number, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. And Beth in Portland, go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Thank you. I have two experiences with emergent care for two different cats over the last few years. And one was about 6 months ago. We used emergency services. We were really glad they were available, but it turned out the initial diagnosis for each cat was pretty serious. One had hepatolipidosis, the other was in CHF. And we knew both, we were given the information that both situations were pretty serious and could not be cured per se. So we were under duress at the time with the news and the prognosis and stuff. So we gave a dollar limit. Please do the preliminary test. We were told how much the preliminary test would be. And we said, okay, don't go over that without talking to us about what you want to do next or what our options are. Each time, however, they did go over a lot. It went from a couple hundred dollars into the thousands.
Oh, wow.
And each time we ended up with a dead cat. And the first time it happened, I took – I made an appointment and spoke with the office manager about it, saying pretty much the same thing. We knew that in the first case, that the situation was pretty dire, but we asked them to go ahead, but with the dollar limit. And then the next thing we know is they've done more interventions than we knew about, and things were, there was no bounce in the treatment that they gave, where the cats looked like hope.
You didn't see any benefit from that. Boy, it's tough. And I'm sorry to hear about your cats, Beth. Dr. Buckley, obviously you can't say what happened in this situation, but just talk about how you kind of, again, how you manage this. You know, someone says you can only do $500 worth of work because that's all I can afford. But then you go in and you think, okay, with $800, I could maybe help this cat. I mean, just talk about that a little bit, if you could, please.
Sure. And I'm sorry that you had that experience. I think, you know, speaking I can't speak for the profession as a whole, but I think oftentimes we just want to try so hard to do what we can that people don't communicate well with their clients.
And it's an emergency situation.
Especially an emergency situation. And so I'm sorry you had that experience. And unfortunately, you know, every doctor is going to practice a little bit differently, and how they communicate with what they're doing and what the expectations are is going to be different. So you'll have a different experience with every veterinarian that you see. For me, the hepatic lipidosis you were talking about, which is fatty liver disease, is a common thing that we see in kitties. And it is something potentially that's fixable, but we're talking about months and months of treatment and a lot of commitment on the owner's part. I definitely have had several kitties that have fully recovered from it. But, you know, with a situation like that, if you have an animal that's jaundiced, right, that's yellow or discolored because they're in liver failure, it's not something that's going to get better in 2 days. You know, it's going to be a very long process. And so the way I approach it is, and I tell people, you know, it may be a couple of hundred or $1,000 to definitively diagnose, but that's just the beginning. You know, if you're not in this for the long haul, well, I don't want you to now have spent $1,000, $2,000 and still have an animal that's gone when I know that there's no way that that amount of money or time is going to fix this problem.
Well, especially when an animal's older, it gets tricky. And here's an email that came in from Tom in Portsmouth. I'll throw this to you, Monica, but want to hear from you too, David Grimm. Tom says, do your guests wish to weigh in on the value of pet insurance? Does it work? Are some carriers better than others? Do you know about this, Monica, pet insurance?
We, you know, I'm aware that there's pet insurance. We encourage new adopters to get pet insurance, the ins and out. I think Dr. Buckley probably deals with pet insurance more than I do.
Do you have pet insurance for your own pets, Monica?
I actually do not have pet insurance for mine. And again, it's, you know, it's a relatively new thing. My pets are a little bit older. If I was getting a younger animal right now, I would do that. I have a backup financial plan, though, for my pets should they get sick. So
can you, you don't have to tell us the dollars and cents, but what is that backup?
Well, I can't, you know, I mean, we have savings is one thing, but I also, they make charge cards that have no interest for 24 months. So I have one that I keep a zero balance on, and it is my emergency pet card. So should my dog had an issue that ran us about $1,700 2 years ago, and it just manages cash flow for me. So,
interesting.
But you know, I think when our adoption counselors work with people around sort of, you know, just like we talked, you know, people talk to each other about their end of life thoughts. I think it's worthy to have those conversations around pets and what pets might get, what, you know, what do you have? Just maintenance of pets, you know, regular vet visits, dental cleanings, which is a relatively new thing for animals.
Shots.
Yeah, they're vaccines, you know, Lyme vaccines, heartworm pills. All of those things are part of owning a pet. And if, you know, it's a commitment you make when you bring in a pet.
Well, David, I think you've written about pet insurance, right? And that it's not all it's cracked up to be?
Actually, I haven't, and I think this probably is probably a better question for Faith. I, you know, the only thing I could say is I wish we had gotten it. Although about 10 years ago, I think what I do know is that pet insurance has gotten a lot better. You know, I think 10 years ago when we got our kittens, there was very few companies, and I think the basic idea was that they didn't do a great job of covering procedures. And I think there's more companies out there now, and I think the coverage is a lot better. And if we were to get pets again, especially considering the amount that we paid for our two cats, I'm pretty sure we'd very seriously look into it.
And David, you wanted to jump in earlier too in our conversation on something.
Oh,
else.
Yeah,
go
the
ahead.
Only thing I wanted
yeah.
to say was you know, getting back to Jasper, you know, 10 years ago when, you know, just talking about the limits of spending, you know, one of the options we were given at the time was a kidney transplant. Which I think at the time they told us was going to cost $50,000.
So, $50,000 for a cat?
And I think it's come down, and Faith may have better. I think it's $20,000 now,
it's
and maybe
20,
a little less now.
Yeah.
It's not it's not cheap. There's only, I think, about three places in the country that do it.
Still, that's a year at UNH.
But that we could not have done. So, you know, there were, even for us who had sort of considered this cat almost like a child to us. We at some point we would have had to draw the line. $3,000 was tough on our pocketbooks, but we could do it, and we were happy to do it. But even back then, and certainly even now, I mean, there were limits that we would have drawn, lines we would have drawn, and then other owners draw as well. You know, and I think one thing owners should keep in mind is that when they're facing these dilemmas, to remember, especially if you've adopted these animals from a shelter, you've really these animals have won the lottery. I mean, being a cat or a dog in an American household today is, by and large, winning the lottery.
Pretty nice life.
It's a nice life. You get to be on vacation for the rest of your life. You're pretty pampered. You're pretty well fed. And so even if an owner has to make that ultimate decision that we can't afford that $10,000 procedure, that $5,000 procedure, I think they should always take comfort in the fact that I saved this animal's life. I gave this animal the best life possible, and hopefully that will be a comfort to them rather than feeling that they have to spend that money they can't necessarily afford.
We'll talk more about pet economics, the dollars and cents of pet ownership, in just a minute. Let's check in now quickly with our summer car raffle. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, the financial dimension of pet ownership, the dollars and cents of our cats and dogs. How far should we go in spending on our companion animals? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can always find us on Facebook or Twitter. With us for the hour, Dr. Faith Buckley. She practices at the Capital Area Veterinary Emergency and Specialty. Also with us, Monica Zuloff, president of the Animal Rescue League of New Hampshire, and David Grimm. He's the author of the new book, Citizen Canine, Our Evolving Relationship with Cats and Dogs. And all of you, lots and lots of comments from our listeners. Here's one from Margaret on Facebook, and I'll throw this to you, I think, Monica. Margaret says, for acute health care, there are more and more nonprofits that help with unexpected expenses, from FACE Foundation to Downtown Dog Rescue's Shelter Diversion Program. They can ensure that it doesn't just come to your income. When my dog had an expensive health event, Margaret says, I was concerned and reminded, well, it won't make you homeless, and I was lucky to pay it off over time, and she's made a full recovery. That's great, Margaret, to hear. And, it is encouraging to hear Margaret remind us that there is help if you just can't afford to save your cat and the cat's only 4 years old and has a long life.
So, and one of the programs that we do have is we will help with sort of a non-emergency one-time veterinary expense. So, when Dr. Buckley talks about the cat that's going to have an ongoing medical need such as diabetes, we can't take that on. We can't economically support an animal over a lengthy period of time. But, a surgery to correct something, we will either pay part or we'll negotiate with local vets and see if we can lower that cost. So there are options for folks. We have a pet food pantry.
Yeah, so if people feel like they can't afford the health care and the food, you guys help with the food.
We do. And part of the reason is that, we see particularly older people who will get Meals on Wheels, and they'll share their food, which is nutritionally balanced for them, with their pet. And we don't want a person going hungry, and we don't want an animal going hungry. So, we do have a food pantry.
Here's an email from George in Newfields who says, please refocus on medical insurance for dogs and cats. My wife and I own the Stratum Newfields Veterinary Hospital, and over one-third of our patients are protected by medical insurance, George says. It makes as much difference for affordability of health care for our patients as it does for people. Quick thought, Faith, on medical insurance.
Yeah, medical insurance, veterinary insurance has come a really long way in the last decade. Definitely at the beginning when things started, they were small companies. Sometimes people would get the insurance and then the company would go under. It's the last thing that we want. But as more and more options and our healthcare has gotten so much better, insurance has gotten a lot better as well. And it really goes a very, very long way. I encourage all new clients with new puppies and kittens, where they're getting a young animal that doesn't have any current health problems, to pursue insurance. Even something as simple as, right, if they got, God forbid, hit by a car or had a broken limb, or they got into the laundry basket and ate a couple of pair of socks, some insurances will cover, almost 90% or all of an emergency surgery type situation. So it really could go a very long way. The other thing that the insurance has done is made certain diseases that certain breeds are predisposed to. So, you know, certain boxers may get a certain kind of heart disease. The insurance may not cover if your dog develops that heart disease, because we're trying to make people more educated about doing research, about finding a breeder that has not been breeding dogs that have this disease, and making breeders more responsible to try to get rid of these problems. So it kind of puts a little more responsibility on pet selection as well. But I cannot even tell you the number of clients that I have, especially with long-term problems, where the only reason we're able to treat their pet long-term, who is doing very well, is because they have insurance that helps them. It really goes a long way.
Let's take another call, all of you. And Lynn joins us from the Lakes region. Hi, Lynn. Go ahead. You're on the Exchange. Welcome.
Yes. Good morning.
Morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am very concerned about the prices of veterinary medicine. I feel that they have gotten extremely, extremely high. To make a long story short, my dog was hit by a car many years ago, and her jaw had to be rewired. She had a concussion, fractured skull.
Yikes.
And yikes, it was a lot. It cost me a little over $100 back then to do all this. They said, you have a 5% chance of this dog living. Do you want to save her, or do you want to let her go? I said, definitely help her.
$100 doesn't sound like a lot, Lynn.
No, but back then it only cost $100 and some odd.
Wow.
And that's why I say, to this day, veterinary medicine has become a very big, big thing.
A big business. Well, Lynn.
That's right. People love their animals. And I only have one other thing to say that I never have understood over the years of owning an animal. When you put an animal to sleep because there's no more hope, I will never understand why we are charged. If I was a veterinarian and my dog or cat was, you know, somebody brought their dog or cat in for death purposes, I would never charge them, because I have given 25 years to a veterinary clinic. I've been giving to them for 25 years.
So you feel like you've already been paying, although somebody could walk in off the street who you've never seen before and ask for that free service without that long-term relationship. I'd love to hear from you too, David, on this idea that, you know, some people feel like it's gotten a little out of hand, the charges and the costs.
Yeah, you know, it's tough because, you know, every time we say we'll spend whatever it takes, we, you know, especially the last few years when I walked out of the vet clinic, it's a little painful sometimes. You know, we just had a checkup for our two cats that entailed some blood work, and it was $600, I think, for both cats, just for a routine checkup. And I, who, you know, will spend pretty much anything, was smarting a little bit from that. You know, and again, this might be a good one for Faith. On the other hand, I haven't seen any rich vets out there, so I don't think vets are necessarily profiting from, I think prices have gone up because the cost of procedures have gone up and because vets are offering a lot more than they used to. I haven't seen really many examples of, and I'm sure there are shady vets, just like there are shady everything else. But I just think it's you know, like any other business, the prices have gone up. But I'd really be interested to hear what Faith says, because I know from my own personal experience that it's become, you know, things that, like the caller was saying, that used to be relatively inexpensive 10 years ago feel a lot more expensive today.
Yeah, go ahead, Faith. Jump in, please.
Yeah, I'm happy to comment. You know, I think one of the things that people don't realize is, and as David mentioned, certainly, you know, there are no overly wealthy veterinarians. You know, most of our technicians and care attendants who work for us, you know, they struggle sometimes to even pay some of their basic bills. I mean, they're clearly in this profession because they love what they do, not because they're looking for, you know, a kind of good financial backing. But even if your animal goes for routine care, right? So say we're doing some basic blood work or giving vaccines. So there's the cost of the vaccines from the manufacturer. There's the needles, the syringes. We have to pay the technicians to be able to work, right, so that we have people to help us, you know, get the blood work. You know, we need to keep the lights on in the clinic. And so sometimes also, you know, property value of what, you know, to keep the business up and running, we need to keep the doors open. And so as electric prices go up and as the manufacturers charge us more money and our technicians need to pay their rent, you know, that's where some of the cost starts to go up, because we have people working for us that need to be able to live on, you know, their work. So yes, things have been increasing, but they've been increasing because cost of living is more expensive as well, cost of the products. So the profit margin certainly is incredibly low. A lot of it is just doing what we can to stay afloat. And that's especially why insurance is so important, because even standard routine annual care, if you have insurance, they'll cover a lot of these things. Some clinics will have almost like a flexible spending care account. So, you know, give them $20 a month towards it. And then when you get to the point where you need to pay up front, it's not all this money out of your pocket all of a sudden. You've actually been saving over months. So, you know, there are things available. People just don't know about it, unfortunately. We need to educate more.
Lynn, thank you very much for the call and so many comments we've received. I want to close out by sharing just a few with you. Here's a Facebook comment from Deborah, who says, I recently got my pet bunny neutered. Prices quoted to me ranged from $175 to $400. Deborah says, I was pretty shocked at the higher end. It's cost prohibitive for most pet owners. Thank you, Deborah, for that Facebook comment. Here's another Facebook comment from Allegra. She says, I don't even look at the bills to treat my almost 18-and-a-half-year-old cat. I know it's a lot, but we have a wonderful vet with whom I consult who is super helpful. I ask her all the time, are we doing too much? My vet and I are evaluating her quality of life regularly and tweak her meds and supplements, and generally she's not in an acute situation, so we're holding steady. Allegra, thank you for that comment. Here's one from Christine, and it's too bad we don't have time to address this. Thank you, Christine. She emails, is it true that dogs have no sense of future? I was told that they have no sense of it will get better, and we have decided to draw the line on care if our dogs will experience too much prolonged pain. I want to thank all three of you for coming in. This has been real interesting. We could have talked a lot more. Monica, it was really nice to meet you.
Thank you
for being here. And Dr. Buckley, thank you also for your time.
Thank you so much.
And David Grimm, author of Citizen Canine, thank you so much for being with us as well.
Thank you, Laura.
This is The Exchange. Let's check in quickly with our summer car raffle.